They don't even want to talk to you, even though they watch the same show that you watch. You're talking about the same show, but you're like completely, you would be better off have not watched it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like you're a loser, and that's strange. That is a strange thing.
You're that small kid in the wave pool that just gets hit by every wave that comes at him, is what it is. Hi, and welcome to the episode of CineNation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Ben Gertz in the bright and sunny Portland, Oregon.
Is it actually bright and sunny or is it rainy?
It's been deliciously blue skied for the past week or so. And dare I say it's been warm here, Brandon. It's been about 80. Getting up towards 85 some days.
That sounds beautiful. So yeah, because I'm now in Alabama and the humidity is terrible. Oh, God. I was, it's like, I think it was like 99 temperature this past weekend, and it was, the heat index was like, with humidity, it was like probably 105, and I was just like, dear God, this is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to tell you that, like, global warming's real, because it's, I mean, clearly the science is still out on it, Brandon, that's a joke, but it's going to get a lot hotter down there.
Yeah, even in LA before I left, it was it reached 99.
Yeah.
And like in the valley and like Burbank and stuff, it was 115.
We had a day recently that hit 100 and it was the hottest it had ever been for that time of year ever in recorded, like, you know, Portland history or whatever, Northwest.
In Portland.
So, you know, that's super encouraging, positive for the future. Speaking of the future, Brandon. Horrible segue.
Yeah, what's going on in your present that affects your future?
Reason I've been absent for so long from this beautiful podcast, and I genuinely have missed it, and I'm glad to be back. But we had a kid. We had a little little baby girl.
As in we, he means him and his wife.
Yes, me and my betrothed. Yeah, we have a new kid on the block, so that's a little bit time consuming. It's been the reason I haven't made appearances here. It's nice to carve out a little time and be back. So, I also like changed jobs. So that's, you know, just because I wanted to have too. You know, more going on, but it's been a good change. It's been positive. So.
No, we've tried our best to not reveal your announcement.
This is a big reveal. This is going to be all caps for the podcast.
Because we wanted you to announce it, and like there was like twice when there was one time recently in the last interview I did with Marcus Cheval, and I was about to say his two kids, and I go, I don't know what's that yet.
No, and I appreciate that because I heard it almost slip out once, and then you guys are like, no, we'll let Ben do it. You know, I appreciate that. So, that's the big news, all caps. So,
so with the kid and everything, what have you been watching? What's some stuff you've been watching?
You know, actually, I have been able to watch some. I wouldn't say a ton, but so I got to see a couple movies. I went to see Money Monster the other night in theaters. You mock me, but my wife was like, you need to stay out and watch a movie so you're human. So that was nice. You know, interesting film. We can maybe talk about it, but and I also found a way to other than a lot of Pixar kid movies like Zootopia, Good Dinosaur, I watched Mad Max Fury Road, slightly delayed from the rest of humanity. Yeah, I watched it for the first time. again, not in theater, shocker. And then I watched They Came Together, which that's what I'm talking about. That's what I was really looking for in my life. It's just comedy. I'm at that stage of life where like Mad Max it didn't do it for me. You know, we can talk about that maybe, but like I just needed They Came Together. That's what I wanted. I just needed it's not a great comedy, but it got the job done. I laughed. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, because I was actually at a film festival where it premiered at, and so I thought I haven't seen it since then. But I thought it was because That was like my first introduction by name to David Wayne.
Yeah.
Like I'd seen High on American Summer. I'd seen Role Models. I knew of his work, but I didn't know of him as a director.
Right.
And so that was when this makes a lot of sense. Like when it was because I met like the music composer who worked on the film composer who worked on the film. And he was like, do you like Wet Hot American Summer? I was like, yeah. And I hadn't seen it in years. He goes, it's just like that. And I was like, okay. I'm like, I don't know what he means by that. Because I had seen like Wet Hot American Summer when I was in high school.
Right.
And didn't know what I was doing then, pretty much. And so when they came together, started playing, I was just like, what the hell is this? It was funny. But like, because the thing is that it promoted itself at Sundance where I saw it. So seriously.
Oh,
like
perfect.
It was, and it was just like, because like the thing is like, oh, this person meets this person, and it's Paul Rudd, Amy Poehler. This is gonna be great. And then you're just watching, you're like, wow, that's a left turn.
Yeah.
But if you knew who David Wayne was,
yeah,
you would expect that.
Well, and you know, I think the thing that I love so much about it is the cast, and not necessarily just the leads. I mean, Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd, kill it. In so many great ways, but it's the fact that like it is stacked, you know, and it's that Wet Hot American Summer, like it's his repertoire of people, Michael Ian Black, Bill Hader, like a lot of these people show up in these perfect roles just for very brief moments. And I don't know, it you know, I kind of felt like being a little bit on like the in crowd, even though I know millions of people are on the in crowd, but when you recognize some of those faces, you're like, this is just perfect. This makes this film so much better than a bunch of, you know, I don't know. It made some of those jokes even funnier to me.
And so what I've been watching, now that I'm in L.A. and I don't have Cinephile Video to go to, quick plug. And so...
not a sponsor, but we love them.
Not a sponsor.
Yet.
But I'm going to talk... Yet. Yeah. Yeah. I do work with them. So anyway, so I've been like going through my old, like I'm going through my movies that I've watched. I did watch before coming back to Alabama. I watched a lot of Adam Sandler movies.
Oof.
Because of the Adam Sandler article that I wrote. But going through good ones and bad ones, because I saw The Do-Over and I just.
Well, we swapped some of those texts where we were looking at the, you know, the data around like the ratings for his films. Was there ever a golden age?
But I think there was. Yeah. I think he did great performances, but I just think anytime that talk about in the article is that anytime he, I think, tried to reveal himself and do something outside of his like normal comedic character, no one went to go see it.
Right.
No one paid attention. And so I think that, like, because it's like if you're revealing, if you're opening up to people and you're like revealing your soul, but no one's listening, why continue to do it?
Right,
is like what I mean. Because like Rain Over Me is like probably his most emotional film because he was from New York and it takes place in New York about 9/11. It was like a very personal movie for him because he actually produced it as well, but no one went to see it.
Right,
it's like so. Anyway, so I watched that. I watched The Frighteners. Have you seen The Frighteners? I don't know if you have.
No.
The Frighteners, it's a Peter Jackson film, and he did it right before Lord of the Rings. And it's this horror comedy. And it stars Michael J. Fox, and it's Michael J. Fox's like last like lead role before he came out that he had Parkinson's. And it's basically, it's kind of a developed a cult classic. It's been a cult classic over time. And it's basically Michael J. Fox is a guy who can see Ghost, who didn't cross over. And so he becomes like this paranormal investigator who's a con artist. So he uses his ghost buddies to like kind of like haunt people. And then he'll make money off them for doing it. And so that's how he makes his living, by conning people and thinking that ghosts are like really haunting their house. And then basically this quote unquote death, like Grim Reaper character comes in and starts killing off people. Almost like a Freddy Krueger type thing, is that he's killing people without them knowing it. Like he's almost in a different dimension. Sounds weird, but it's like basically if it wasn't for the Frighteners, Peter Jackson wouldn't have done The Lord of the Rings, because he developed Weta Works, which is the visual effects stuff that he used for Lord of the Rings. And basically he was like, we developed all these computers and we don't have a movie to make with it. And so for the Frighteners. Like, we were finished it. Now I need something to do with it. Like, well, let's just try to do Lord of the Rings.
Right. I mean, there's some steps between A and Z there.
There is. But he was like, we did, because he said in the introduction, he's like, we didn't have a movie to do, and I had all these computers. And I was like, I got to find something to do to, like, make use of all the stuff we just paid for. And so, wow. And because we had all this stuff to offer visual effects wise, plus it was in New Zealand for shooting, like, we could go get Lord of the Rings.
Wow. And did he, so I guess this is the part of that history I don't know. I mean, I knew he's involved with Weta, but did he fund that? Is that part of his production company? How did that all...
The way it sounds is he's from that area. I think he's from that area.
Yeah.
I think he's from New Zealand. And so I think he just, it was kind of like his production company, and they needed some stuff done.
Wow.
And he did everything there, because this was his, like, first big studio film that was actually shot in New Zealand.
Right.
And so it's like kind of like this test run for him of, like, can we shoot a studio film in New Zealand and do all the work in New Zealand? And hello.
I think it worked out pretty well. I mean, I think he made his scientific experiment prove out.
Yeah.
Actually, my brother, Caleb, has been rereading the books for like his second or third time. And he was telling me the other day, he's like, the way that they were able to condense and bring out the best moments from the books is mm-hmm. really impressive, you know, because he's watched the movies mm-hmm. a lot, the extended versions, all that sort of stuff. He's read the books multiple times. And he's like, you know, the books are really just not, like, when you really step back from it, they're not that great to read in a lot of places.
Yeah.
There's just moments that are just amazing, but there's just this kind of like trotting through of like an old man telling a story. Yeah, yeah. And so the movies are just really, really great from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, it's impressive.
Another thing I did right before I went came back to Alabama from LA, I went to, and this kind of goes to our topic, I went to a Netflix panel on casting right before I left. And it was about, like, they had people from the casting directors from Narcos, House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, Love, I'm trying to think, Master of None. And it was really interesting because it was stuff I never, it's like simple stuff that I never thought of about, like, the Netflix model of, like, how they produce content. Hmm. Because there, and a lot of the best questions came from the audience. There was this one kid, he was like 9 years old, because most of this event was like a SAG-AFTRA event. And so it was all these SAG-AFTRA actors who were like wanting to know, a lot of them I felt like were wanting to know, like, how do I get a role? How do I get noticed by a casting director? But to me, I was more like interested in how the process happened to produce these shows. And one of the, this like 9-year-old actor asked, what was the difference between doing a Netflix show and a regular television show? And the big difference was the Gillian Anderson from Love said that when you're doing a television show, because she was talking about Community because she was on it, is that you always had this fear that you're going to get canceled. Because it's like you're doing, like, say, 6 shows, and then next thing you know, like, you're shooting the next one, like, oh, we got canceled, let's wrap this up and be done. But with Netflix, you're guaranteed a season. And so you're going to do it straight. Yeah. And so the pressure of it is all off. So you're having a lot more fun. You're not having to worry about, like, your job. Because you have basically a job security. You have that one season to work.
Yeah. So just it's that fear of the mid-season cancellation.
Yeah.
Which is one of those things that's like, I don't know. It's so strange. I don't have the chart in front of me, but there's people, I'll try and find it, but it was talking about the number of original shows that are being made and how it's gone up significantly, right? There's just so much original content being made by all the companies, including the major networks, but the lifespan or the number of seasons ordered for a lot of these network shows is very low. It's in decline, you know, and the mid-season cancellations is even, you know, there's more of them. There's more of that happening where shows we just never hear of get made with like 6 episodes and just get killed off. And, you know, where they go, we don't know. But it's so strange where it's like Netflix is at least like I mean, even there are shows that I think a lot of... I was talking with someone at the office, the new office, new job, where, you know, he was saying, like, they love Marco Polo, right? I don't. It doesn't even get recommended in my list. Like, I don't I don't know anything about it, really. Right.
Yeah.
But he said it's great. He said it's basically like Game of Thrones. It's kind of like Netflix was trying to make a Game of Thrones. This is all just his, you know, take on it. But he said opinion, they love it. They like it. Yeah. It got renewed. And it's one of those things where, like, even a show like that where not a lot of people talk about that show, but they've, you know, it's probably got a pretty good international audience, blah, 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 blah. But they've let it kind of play out. Like, if you're going to put all this money into it, they have the data, and they're kind of playing that long game where it can work. Whereas I don't know the numbers behind why the networks would bring on a show for six episodes and then kill it. You know, that just seems like you either kill it earlier than that or you at least let it finish the season. Like, I don't know.
You've already put so much money into it. But yeah, it's, so it's interesting. I was like, oh, I never thought about that. And then with Love, for example, they were already shooting season two of Love before it was ever released on Netflix.
Wow.
Which I find interesting. Basically, they were given a two-season order before they ever premiered on Netflix.
Well, some of those shows have two-season orders from the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's really interesting because it's like, you know, talk about a bet. I mean, we have talked about what happens for Netflix when they have a dud on their hands. I mean, and I guess these Sandler films are in some way an answer to that, right? I mean, so those films have been trashed so heavily by, like, critics, everyone I've talked to. But clearly, they gave them full page, top banner space. They promoted the heck out of them.
Yeah.
They stood by
them. Well, the thing is, we don't know the numbers of it, so we don't really know how much is being seen. Right. But yeah, so that was very interesting. The other interesting part, Nev Campbell was talking about, because she was just on the recent season of House of Cards. And basically, she goes, we shot House of Cards over 7 months.
Wow.
So we made 13 episodes in 7 months. She goes, when I was doing Party of Five, we were doing an episode every 7 days. And we did like 22 episodes. So at those 7 months, we were able to really take our time and produce good quality work. Because 7 months to do 13 episodes, 13 hour-long episodes, when they're producing 22 hour-long episodes and one of them like every week.
Wow.
And so you have more time to like really get the best story, tell the best story you can. And so I found that really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that clearly shows that, like, you know, time isn't just like, hey, we'd like more of it. It's money, right? I mean, money pays for all those people to be around for 7 months. That's a crazy amount of production time. But, you know, this is one of the things, I do want to hear all of this, but this is one of the things that I want to ask you about is one of the things I've been mulling over is this phrase that people say all the time now. It's just kind of like part of our common parlance around this stuff, but it's like must watch TV, right? And it's pretty clear that like for these some of these like banner top tier Netflix, Amazon shows, any of these shows where they're trying to grab headlines, they're not just trying to be like a little bit better. They're just willing to spend a lot of money to be as close to perfect as possible. Like House of Cards, they're just dumping money on 7 months of production to not just be like a nine on the scale. They want to be a 9.1 or 2 or 3, you know what I mean, to get that last little bit of perfection and polish.
It's always that phrase has always been around, and it's almost like it's becoming almost generic to say it's must watch TV or must see TV.
Well, and see, this is how I was thinking about it, because I want to ask you, because like you and Thomas and, you know, Hunter, like you guys are all keeping up with more of what's going on. I've been in kind of a hole in the ground, right? You know, that's what got me thinking about this. Like, I've been kind of out of it. And when I make the list in my mind, because a lot of these are the conversation came up on another podcast where they were talking about this much watch TV as a way to keep people on subscriptions, like HBO Go, Amazon Prime, all these things. And for me, when I think of the list of like, must watch, meaning like I would pay almost any amount of money, or, you know, I would sign up for a subscription, right? I mean, there's a very short list for me. It's like the next, and really thinking about like seasons of shows I'm already hooked on. Like, it's basically Rick and Morty season 3. I mean, I'll crawl over broken glass to get to that, which means I'll maybe pay for, you know, a cable subscription or whatever it takes to get Cartoon Network or whatever. Anyway, Black Mirror, which is coming out on Netflix, and I'm super excited about. And then
the American is it the British version? Is that what it
is? No, Black Mirror. Black Mirror. Brandon, we've talked.
Yeah, that's
what.
It's a British show, correct?
It's a British show, and they've basically Netflix, you know, paid for production of the third season, or co-produced the third season. I can't remember the exact deal, but. Anyway, coming out soon.
Continue. Sorry.
The list is almost over. Sense8. Sense8, the Wachowskis Netflix original. I loved season 1. I have no idea what they're going to do with season 2, but it got renewed. It's another show that people didn't talk that much about, but I just devoured. I really got hooked on that show, but that's pretty much it. Like, tell me for you, I mean, so I didn't name any Amazon shows, not because I'm a hater, but like, I just don't know of any. Like, for the HBO stuff, like, I really just want to see John Oliver, but that's all free now on YouTube, right? So why would I get a subscription? Yeah. That was the only thing that really hooked me onto it.
Well, with HBO, I've started watching Game of Thrones, and I know that's like, some people will go, oh, you just started. But I started watching Game of Thrones, and I'm really enjoying it. So that's one show. And from the people I know, because so many of my friends watch Game of Thrones, and so they're caught up, and I am not caught up. So it's just every week. And I think Thomas has mentioned this before on the show, is that Game of Thrones is one of the few shows out there where people, like, it's an event.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things where, like, you want to watch it live. Right. You want to watch it the time it's supposed to be shown. It's like my roommates, they like watching it, like we're in California. They want to watch it Pacific time of when it premieres.
Right.
They actually don't want to do HBO Go for the 2 hours before they can watch it. They actually want to watch it when it's supposed to air in their, their part
that's
of the country.
Intense.
So it's like, it's like it's become this event thing. And that's very rare nowadays with streaming and how everything is.
Well, and can I tell you what's even more rare about it? And this is, again, because I've been living in a hole, basically, and not been able to keep up with things. I think it's interesting to me, the discussion. Like, okay, so Game of Thrones, I get, right? It's once a week. You commit to it. There's a schedule to it. It's called television. Everybody's used to that.
Yeah.
But for these streaming shows that drop in a block, you know, the new season of House of Cards drops. And, Thomas was talking about it on a previous episode, especially with Game of Thrones, but any of these really popular shows, if you don't watch it basically in real time, it's going to get spoiled on social media. And it's so strange for some of those streaming shows because, I mean, like, I don't think, like, I think I'm maybe on the scale of, like, you know, normal amount of time for entertainment, probably on the lower end than maybe most Americans. I don't know. But, like, I don't have, like, blocks of time to watch an entire season, like, in a 13-hour chunk or something. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't happen. But, you know, even I know some of the spoilers from House of Cards, right? Within the day or day after. And I don't know what you do about that, if that's a problem or not. But to me, it's strange that any of these shows, like, if they really are great, like the back catalog for HBO, like if some of these shows are, like The Wire, I really want to go back and rewatch some of those episodes again. Because on Amazon, you know, they made that deal with the Prime or whatever, right? And I haven't gone back and rewatched it because they reframed it all in HD. And I read some of the articles about how, have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
So I think they shot on film, but it was framed with the DP and, you know, shot with the intention of 4:3. You know, and so that's how I watched it when I first came along or whatever. But they've gone back and in an effort to kind of like juice the numbers or bring more people onto the show or hook people on it.
Yeah.
They've gone through and reframed everything in 16:9 for HD. And so it is HD quality, but the framing is different. And so they talk about how, like, the original people didn't really get to have input in how some of those framing choices were made. And so you get completely, they're not every scene, obviously, but for some scenes, they had examples where like, and it was an interview with some of the original people saying like, we wouldn't have done this way because we never thought, like they had examples where they had intentionally just taped off the monitors, even though they shot 16:9, they taped off the monitors to hide it because they're like, well, it's not going to show up. But when they went back to reframe, what are you going to do? You know, it's like, there's that light stand, or I don't think there was anything that egregious, but anyway, I don't remember what got me down that tangent.
I'll go off that because you're going off HBO and how, so you're saying HBO changed it. Okay. So that's one thing going back to the Netflix.
And I don't think you can get to the original 4:3, which is what bugs me. But anyway, it's kind of like Lucas changing Star Wars. Like, I don't want you to change it. Yeah. It's like Kanye changing Life of Pablo. You can't listen to the original version of Life of Pablo unless you bought the CD off his website. I think he keeps changing it. Anyway, that's,
does he really?
Yeah, like I was trying to listen to it today on Google Play or whatever, you know, my music streaming service of choice, du jour of the day, and it randomly will go down, and when you listen back through, when it finally does come back, it's different. Minor tweaks, but I'm waiting for the person who puts together, like, you know, the big article that compares, like, because he's tweeted some of the changes. Time. Like, what do y'all think about the changes I made to Wolves, which is one of the tracks? And it's strange. It's strange with the fact that because I don't own it, it's not mine to say, like, well, this is the one I liked. It's, he can change it whenever he wants. I mean, he's Kanye. But the same with George Lucas, and the same with, you know, HBO with The Wire, which a lot of people consider like an immaculate masterpiece. But they're like, well, no, we'd rather give it to you in HD. Don't you like this more? And it's like, no, I want to see it the way they filmed it. That's the way it was made. Yeah. Anyway.
Because that's a part of the thing. But so going off of that, saying HBO changing it without the creator's consent or...
Well, I think they signed off on it. It wasn't a conflict necessarily, but they just didn't have the time to be involved is what I read.
Okay, so they weren't involved. Yeah. So one thing that they talked about how Netflix was is that Netflix really trust their creators. They basically just... They trust you enough to... The people they hire... They trust the people they hire to make good work. Yeah. And they step aside. And I think the casting director was... Some of the casting directors were like, that's the most exciting change of it.
Yeah.
Compared to like the TV and film. The most interesting part to me, this, it seems very subtle, but I find really interesting to kind of show kind of the change of television and why we're going through this kind of renaissance, is that most of the casting directors for the Netflix shows never were casting directors for television.
Oh.
They were all casting directors for film. And why I find that interesting is because, like, the people who casted or who cast House of Cards, they were Fincher's casting directors. Like, they still cast his movies.
Right.
And so it's like, and because they shoot it, so they shoot all the episodes kind of back to back to back, it's like shooting one huge film.
Well, that's what that 7-month production schedule makes me think of. It's just an infinitely long David Fincher film, which sounds, sounds rough.
So I felt like literally every single person that was a casting director that was speaking at that panel, and there was like 5 or 6, they're like, oh, we've never done TV before. Like, we've never done like network television before.
Right.
They've only done mostly films. And so, and I also find it interesting that a lot of their stuff was like very different than what I hear like casting directors talk about. Mm. Like they're talking about how much they search online for people. Like they go through web series, they go through online content, they go to stand-up comedy shows, they go to sketch comedy shows, and they're just searching for new people. And a lot of people get this thing like, oh, you've, at least in LA, is that you have to find a manager, you have to find an agent, and that person has to pass you off to this person. But usually I notice they are like, we constantly look for people. And that's probably why they are really good at their jobs.
Yeah.
And then another thing I found interesting was how the casting directors, since that, because it's a very, the industry is big, but it's also very, very small.
Sure.
So usually you know a lot of people that work on the same job as you. So all the casting directors up there know one another. And so they're just like, yeah, we like kind of trade off people from shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we'll steal from them, from their auditions, or I don't think they steal from auditions, but like, for example, they said there was this actor who was supposed to be on Narcos. And when they're prepping for Narcos, House of Cards casting directors really wanted him for a role in House of Cards. And basically, they were like, the casting director went to like the creators and go, hey, they want him for House of Cards. This is honestly better for him, like, to be seen as an actor. Let's give them him, and then we'll get someone else new.
Yeah.
And so it's like they're constantly working with one another. And one of them actually, one of the ones, I can't remember which one she did, but she also did Sense8. I think she was on Narcos. She was one of the casting directors on Narcos, and she also was a casting director for Sense8. So they tend to use the same people. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and they're all, I was just going to add, I mean, from a, I can't imagine casting Sense8, because if you haven't seen it, it genuinely is a global production. Like, I, you know, we're talking about like Netflix being hands off with creators, and I understand why people maybe don't talk about the show a little bit. I mean, it's a little strange. It's a Wachowski thing, you know, so it's strange, but the sheer, like, the thing that hooked me through, got me through to the hook, which I think for me was about the fourth episode or so, but it's the sheer scale of it, you know, and not in like a, you know, the universe, you know, crazy sci-fi. It's the fact that it's like, here's a pretty long scene in India. Here's a pretty long scene in Germany, you know, and you start to think like, well, wait a minute, this isn't just, they were there for a weekend. You start to realize like this was filmed all over the world, and they flew these actors all around to these different locations. Oh, look, they're in South Korea now. And the logistics of it, I think that's what's most surprising to me. It's just the logistics of it, from the casting to the actual production. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how they pulled it off.
Now, are these like the same actors going from place to place?
Yeah, that's, or is, without, you know, without spoiling it, basically, it's set up very early in the film, but basically, or look at me, sure, the film. Yeah, this it does play like one big long film. But yeah, the hook of it all, or the brief, is basically that these groups of people, you know, basically, I think it's eight because of the name of the show. But you have these eight people that are all, you know, it's got weird descriptions of it in the show, but basically they're all connected and they can communicate with each other, and then as they kind of figure out pretty quickly, they can be in the same places as each other. It's strange, but what was really strange is thinking like, okay, they're in Chicago. There's two or three actors here. Well, now they're in Iceland. There's two or three actors there. Now they're in South Korea. There's two or three actors there. And it's not these huge, you know, and there's a character in Africa, there's characters all over the globe, and they bounce around, and anyway, I don't think that they just blew through money. Like, I haven't heard what the budget was, but just the fact of like getting it all pieced together, because they do these really, from an editing standpoint, it's really interesting, because they do these transitions across locations that feels semi seamless, but it's like from one part of the globe to the other, and it's this, you know, wrap around behind someone's head, and you realize they're standing out on the top of a building or some crazy thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, could they have shot that? I mean, the thing with movies nowadays, or TV and movies nowadays, I mean, you can kind of shoot stuff anywhere. Like, is it very distinctive in the location? Like,
yeah, I mean, because I was really kind of watching it like, surely, and obviously I could be wrong about the scale of some of this stuff, but I mean, it doesn't, there are zero moments that I can think of that felt like green screen. They're genuinely in some, you know, driving in a, you know, a big bus going down the road in Africa, and then they're in Iceland, and you know, there were at least camera crews that traveled there. You know what I mean? Like, there were at least camera crews that traveled all over the world. But I think they really did, like, schedule out all these different actors across all those locations for, you know, extended periods of time.
Well, and Game of Thrones, I think, is very similar, because they have, like, base camps in, like, multiple countries.
Yeah.
And, like, it's interesting, because I remember it was Emilia Clarke was talking about how, like, she actually never gets to see anyone else who's in the show, because you're like, all your stuff, because you're kind of separated, and she's off like doing her storyline in a completely different country, so she never actually interacts with as many people. Like, you're just like, oh, of course they hang out. And she's like, no, I see them at the red carpet, and that's like really, where I see
it. She's still waiting on the dragons like everybody else.
Yeah, and it's just, oh gosh. So yeah, it's interesting.
Did I get an answer from you on like must watch TV for you? Like, what is it? Like, if you had to name off the top of your head, like, what would you sign up for? Like, what is it that you're actually anticipating that makes that list for you? That's not like saved online somewhere, but is genuinely just like in your head. You know what I mean? Because I think that that's, to me, that's what indicates like intent to sign up for these things, or like go out to a movie theater or whatever. Like, it's a small list. It's a much smaller list than I think most people, when they write about it online, imply.
Yeah, well, I mean, because I know Thomas is probably like waiting to hear my answer on this one. Because I watch more movies than television, but so, for example, TV, I want to watch Broadchurch season 2, because I watched season 1 and really loved it. Good call.
The British version, not the American. Yeah. Don't let Thomas tell you that the American one has any merit. It is meritless. Other than the lead characters, maybe, but gosh, meritless. Yeah,
and so, love season 2. Love season 2, I'm waiting for it to come out. Because I really loved, no pun intended, really loved season 1.
Let the crickets be your guide for humor.
Shut up, man. So, Game of Thrones is one. I'm getting into it. I need to watch more of it. That's one thing, because I'm, like we talked before in show notes, is that I'm making a film, a thesis film, and like when you're doing that, visually, you're trying to watch stuff that goes with your film.
Sure, yeah.
So you don't have much time to like watch stuff that has nothing to do with it. It's like Game of Thrones is like, I'm not making this like...
You could add dragons to your short film, Brandon. Everyone's doing it.
And so it's like...
Or you could just add dragons that never show up.
So, Broadchurch season 2, love season 2. I would say Game of Thrones. Another show I want to get into, because I watched the first episode with Thomas and really, really loved it, and that's Preacher. Mm. I'm trying to think what else. I can't wait for Baller season 2 on HBO. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, if The Rock can get a schedule lined out.
Yeah, well, they've already shot it. It's coming out this summer. Okay. So, another show I watch, this is not like that type of show, but I consistently watch Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Yep. Another show that I really watch, I don't watch it now because I don't have DVR here, so I have to watch it when I can, is Craig Ferguson's new show. Called Join or Die, and it's nothing like the shows I'm talking about, but basically it's Craig Ferguson, and I was going to recommend this one later. It's Craig Ferguson with like three people, and they have like a historical topic, like who's the biggest badass in history. Yeah. And so they go through, and they talk about historically who is like the biggest badass in history, or who's the worst president, and who... What's the biggest fiasco in history,
so
or whatever?
So it's like BuzzFeed, and but so with Craig Ferguson.
But it's like with historical topics, and you usually have like Michael Ian Black's on there a good bit, so you might like it. You have comedians, but then you also have like history professors, or like people who were like, if it's done with like with space or something like that, you have like these NASA like engineers who are on there. You have like different people who are specialists in their fields, and then you have comedians talk about it. It's like At Midnight with like topics that are like historical.
Yeah, and not quite so hectic. Even though I love At Midnight.
So yeah, and so those are shows. And I want to get into Game of Thrones more. I want to get into Fargo more, because I know Thomas constantly talks about it, and I love the actors I have in that show. And there's another show I was going to talk about. Well, just not that Fargo. Fargo is the one I really want to get into. And if True Detective season 2 was good, I'd say True Detective season 3, but I can't right now.
Mic drop. That's the thing. That's good. That's that way. But it basically, you know, you named 5-ish, right? I mean, we were in that neighborhood like you can count them on your hand. Like there's obviously those, like and, I can name off more things that I hope to watch at some point.
I want to see. Yeah, that's the thing is that I'm not naming off the ones that I've seen. I've named off like three or four that I actually currently watch and I'm like trying to keep up. Some I'm like I want because there's so many shows I want to watch. Right. But it's I do think that the phrase must watch TV has become just very, very generic. It's like calling someone a genius. It's right. like it's a very that's like it's putting such a generic term and a loose term is that what makes it must see TV? What makes this person a genius? And I mean, people will say like The Bachelor is must see TV. It's like that's people will say
not
that.
On my list.
And this is it's like not on our list. It's nowhere. It's like this is like or like I know like the one thing I always because my mother used to watch The Bachelor so much and The Bachelorette. The phrase they always use, I don't know why we're on this conversation, but the phrase they always use before every rose ceremony was, this is the most dramatic rose ceremony in history.
Oh my gosh.
Every damn episode they said, wow. They probably still do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's beautiful. Basically
must it's see, beautiful. It's my favorite. This is the greatest.
It's very,
we're going to make this show great so again. Like, all right.
So it's like must see, must watch TV. It's becoming the most dramatic rose ceremony in history. That's what it's becoming. Yeah. It's becoming that phrase to me. Because the thing is, that phrase takes away from shows that are doing really interesting things.
Right.
Like another show that is considered must-watch TV, but because it's such a saturated market of must-watch TV, you don't think about it. And then something actually I want to watch is, it's the Lifetime show. That's about reality television.
Oh, I've seen the promos for that, where they're basically showing behind the scenes, right? It's like how reality shows get made, basically.
And I'm like blanking on the name.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just like reality.
Well, so the two ideas kind of clicked in my mind a little bit, which is the fact that must watch TV is really when you get down to it. Well, go if you found the name, hit me.
Unreal.
No, I mean that.
But that was like it won a Peabody Award.
Oh, great!
Like, so it's like it won like pretty legit awards, sure. But it's on Lifetime and no one talks about it.
Well, but that's the thing is like there's a couple things that overlap here, so I'm gonna try and find a way to connect them. But
yeah.
What I think most people mean about must watch when it's about all these subscription services now is. For example, AMC wanted, you know, when they had Mad Men, they figured out that people wanted it so bad that they could jack up the prices on the cable operators and say, if you want Mad Men, not necessarily AMC, but if you want Mad Men, which comes on AMC, you got to pay they doubled their carriage fees around the time of that show. And I think they've increased it because they have The Walking Dead and some of these other shows. So they figured out that if they could get their hooks into people and have a quote-unquote most, must-watch show, then they could hook people. And, you know, so that's the thinking behind it. Is everyone's competing to have one of those shows. But when you really get down to it is a very fine point on the top of the mountain where obviously not everyone has the same list of, you know, your mom's got The Bachelor on her list that's not on our list. So That's not on her list
anymore. I just want to clarify.
Okay.
That.
I mean, no.
Bates Motel is on her list, right?
Okay.
Now.
See, I mean, so everyone's kind of shifting around, but but when you're really trying to everyone's clamoring for that prize. And what's strange about it in this other aspect that I was thinking about is just how fleeting that is in some ways. Because for a show like House of Cards, which gets labeled, must watch, or Orange Is the New Black, or Sense8, like. From a buzz perspective, and I've heard people, people have written about this, where Netflix drops it all at once, which, causes people to go into a frenzy. But from another angle is it almost feels like it kind of just goes away very quickly in the same breath, which maybe that's the way to kind of like puncture the like consciousness of, the casual Netflix subscriber who just didn't know. It's better to have their Facebook feed and Twitter feed blow up with House of Cards things that make them think about it than have a slow burn where you just never hear about it. But there's a strange aspect where like the shelf life of some of these things feels like it's not as long as it maybe should be. And maybe that, maybe I'm just thinking about it wrong, because to me, like, The Wire is still relevant. You know what I mean? That's still a show that I want to watch. And for a lot of these newer shows, there's just kind of like, if I told you that I like you're kind of saying like you're embarrassed a little bit about catching up on Game of Thrones, but why? Yeah. Like, it's still a show that's going on. Everyone's still talking about it.
Yeah.
You just didn't have time to watch it at the moment that it was live and popular. Like, that's
and when the
it's that social shaming that's so strange to me, because I guess I've been on the receiving end of that. It's like, well, why aren't you watching stuff? Well, it's like, well, I have a 2-month-old. You know what I mean? Like, big surprise there. Wow. But it's that thing of like, if it's so good, then not everyone can watch it in that brief little window where it has buzz.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you didn't have the actress show up at your apartment asking why you hadn't watched the show.
No, I didn't, Brandon. And ding, you did, which was impressive. Yeah.
Granted, I had to walk. I was like, no, I don't watch the show. And her agent goes, well, she's in it. And I'm like, I'm aware.
Thanks, agent person.
I was just like, I do know this. I'm highly aware Maisie Williams is in the show of Game of Thrones. I am not that dumb right now.
No, but you know, it might have been good for her to be around a regular human that didn't know everything about the show like, all the time. Yeah.
What's up, Maisie? Going on the topic you just, or the statement you just said, which I found very interesting, is that shows now can come in and out of popular, like, water cooler talk now.
Yeah.
It's like, it's in and out that quickly. And I find that really interesting. Because I remember, for example, like, I'll go back to True Detective. When True Detective Season 1 came out, I was waiting for Season 2.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it took a year and a half. And that's another thing that certain shows, I think House of Cards does it fairly well. They do it every year. But certain shows, because they take their time with it, it becomes like a year and a half or a 2-year gap.
Yeah.
And nowadays with so many shows that are really, really good that are coming out, it's hard to keep up. Now, or I think a reason why House of Cards does, and shows like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, is because those were fairly early in like the existence of Netflix, is why.
Yeah.
Those are still talked about. Because I have some that are like, season 3 is not as good as season 1 and 2 of House of Cards, like season 4 is even worse. I don't know, I don't watch the show. I've watched some episodes. But it's like, but because it's such that it was so huge for that one, that time when it came out, it's almost like it's going to continue to have a following. And because Netflix pushes it so hard, and we don't know their numbers, we don't know if it's lost its audience over time.
Right.
We kind of don't know. That's the thing with Game of Thrones. If you look at Game of Thrones with ratings, it's consistently going up every year.
Yeah.
Like, it is becoming one of the most watched shows.
Helps for Game of Thrones in a way is everyone knows that it's going to end. You know, at a certain, they've already announced it's going to run out. And from just the synopses of House of Cards, like, they haven't said. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think that helps the show to really kind of, like, put a tail on it in a certain way. It helped Lost, even though Lost, you know.
Well, so here's the thing, because this is something I mentioned before. I feel like, I think in this day and age with television, I feel like you can be a greater show if you do what Game of Thrones is doing. And you say, we're doing 2 more seasons, and that is it.
Yeah.
Because it's like Babe Ruth calling a home run. You're pointing at it, so you're expecting it to happen. And when it happens, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Instead of you're just wondering if he's going to hit it or not, because we don't know.
Right.
That's how the analogy I'm making with television is that if you keep going and going and just see how far you can go, in turn, you're going to burn a lot of people out. And in turn, I think it tarnishes the legacy of that show. It's like what worked with Breaking Bad was that Breaking Bad said Vince Gilligan always had, like, I'm doing this amount of seasons. And that's what worked for those shows. And so when you do that, I think it helps your legacy more.
Yeah.
And you're not like coming back to it. Which, like David Chase.
Yeah. Which is what I was kind of getting at with that like shelf life thing, which I think is what applies to The Wire, is that you kind of knew, I'm pretty sure David Simon kind of knew. I don't think he knew he was going to get renewed maybe from the first season, but like there was that structure in place for these are the seasons we're going to do, and it's over. And they're very distinct, and they serve their own purposes, and it all builds into this wonderful whole. But for some of these other shows, it's unclear. You know, it's unclear when it's going to just keep going. And I, like you said, like to me, it seems like if you're, and I think it's that blockbuster mentality from film a little bit of like, well, it's working, so let's just make 10 of them. You know what I mean? Like,
just keep doing
they're going to make Avengers till they just can't make any more Avengers. But like to me, there's another aspect of it for Netflix where it's like, okay, I know you found a winning formula, but can't these things be kind of self-contained? Can't they have can't you bottle up what's great about them and not let them lose their fizz? Like, let them end on like a 9 out of 10. Like, let people love the hell out of it and then bottle it up. And it's going to sit there on your shelves forever because they don't disappear. You have unlimited space for your own, content, and then make new shows that continue on. I don't know. Like, I'm not necessarily against, like, I understand why they do it. It's business. It's working. Why stop it? But there's a certain sense of like, I guess there's like a phase. I feel like we're in a different phase where like back when we were kids before DVR, you either saw a show or you didn't. You know, you either watched it at the time or you didn't. Maybe someone taped it on VHS, but you know, that's like back in the day. Then there was this whole DVR phase where it's like, okay, well, you were a little bit delayed, but you know, you can't fill up your DVR. Like there's a limit. So you got to kind of like hurry along and maybe you're like a week behind, right? Well, now it's like it all drops. I mean, and if you don't watch it like in that sort of 1 or 2, 3 day, 1 week window, it's moved by you. And then now there's a new show that's dropped in its entirety. And it kind of feels like if you're the kid that shows up to the party and was like, hey, House of Cards season one, you know what I mean, guys? Like people are just like, they don't even want to talk to you, even though they watch the same show that you watch. You're talking about the same show. But you're like completely, you would be better off have not watched it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you're a loser. And that's strange. That is a strange thing.
You're that small kid in the wave pool that just gets hit by every wave that comes at him, is what it is.
I mean, I kind of want to just go to a party and be like, name off all the popular shows and be like, season one, Breaking Bad, pretty cool, right, guys? You know, and like, cool, no one's going to be into that. Even though.
Chemistry teacher who sells meth, right? Like, that's what it is. So ingenious. No, that's a good point. It's not just you get fall behind, in turn you fall out of the conversation.
Right.
Because like I've been, and this is probably the same thing with me when I talk to you about movies, is that when you have someone talking about a TV show, you just kind of fall out of the conversation because you don't know what the hell they're talking about. And also too, sometimes they're like upset that you haven't caught up, so they can't talk about it with someone.
Right.
And that's tangent, but yeah, it's like
it's that social. I'm getting at that social pressure aspect of it because it's a strange human behavior that's recent. That's what I'm getting at. It's like we didn't used to be this way because we couldn't, right? I mean, they didn't. They didn't land in this way in like 13-hour blocks, and so you couldn't be that way. But the other part of it too is like what you were just saying too with film. Film has always had kind of a timer on it. It's gotten shorter with the release windows, but like it was either in theater or you saw it at home, and so you're the kid that missed Lord of the Rings, or like I missed The Hobbit on big screen, right? So I never get to see The Hobbit in 3D on the big screen. That's just a thing that has passed, right? But
or Mad Max, like Mad Max 3,
right? Well, no, and I saw it at home, but like we can at least still say like, well, you know, you still saw it, whatever. But it seems like because these TV shows or these, you know, whatever, internet shows, whatever you want to call them, these Netflix shows, Amazon shows, all these things, if there isn't that same sort of socially acceptable, like, here's the theater window, here's the home viewing window, because it's all just home viewing, it's all just on your cell phone, but there's this constructed social thing that we've all kind of pressured each other on, which is very new. This is like past couple years, we've all agreed to be just kind of assholes to each other. You know what I mean? Like, and I try not to participate in this, but it's like people get just downright kind of mean to you if you haven't seen their show that is just the show. Like, you are not of their quality.
And I think it's TV shows and film too.
Yeah.
But I think the TV show, this renaissance of television, I think that's pushed it even further, is that it's like, you haven't seen that show? And because, like, if you don't, like, if you just say you miss a year of TV nowadays.
God forbid, Brandon. You're missing, God forbid.
God forbid you're missing a year, but, like, you're missing House of Cards. You're missing Game of Thrones.
How did people
missing
live?
Walking Dead. Like, you're missing, like,
no, but
if you
put
miss
a number
10
on it, because that's dozens of hours of television. You start getting it towards hundreds of hours.
You're into the thousands of hours.
Right.
If you're looking at popular shows, I'm like, I remember one time, like a year or so ago, I asked friends, like, give me like 5 shows that you think I should watch. And they ended up giving me like 30, I get 35 shows of shows I haven't seen, some with multiple seasons, some are like our hour-long episodes. I'm just like, where do I begin?
Right, and I think there's that whole paradox of choice for behavior among people where it's like this classic study where it's like if you give out samples of jelly, I think is what they were doing at a grocery store, but if you only have like one or two options and you give them a sample and you say, do you want to buy A or B? People will decide. Like, there's a pretty good conversion of like, yeah, I'll take the grape or the strawberry. But if you give a sample and there's like 10 options, and even though people like it, they're like, yeah, I like this. And you're like, well, do you want to buy? And they go, oh gosh, I don't know. They panic. And you see this all the time now with like people just scrolling through Netflix forever. You know, people just like not making a decision because they get overwhelmed. And there's a kind of that commitment thing to it, right? It's like, I don't want to commit to even like a show like Breaking Bad. It's like, I know I'm going to throw so much time into it. Or House of Cards at this point, 4 or 5 seasons. Like, if you haven't started and everyone's already deemed you a loser, why would you start now? You know what I mean? Like, you're just going to be falling behind forever. And that, I guess this is a lecture to myself. I will always be uncool now because I will not be able to watch hundreds of hours of television a year. It's just not in the cards.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
I really wish Thomas...
Boom.
I wish Thomas and Hunter were on the show because this is like one they'll hate because we started talking about it. Because this wasn't the original plan.
I love it when a plan comes not together.
It's just you just had to say what's must watch TV. I mean, another issue because there's so many shows out there. There's and the thing is, another thing you'd mentioned before was talking about how certain networks need that one show.
Right.
And like, so when you go through it with Lifetime, you kind of have Unreal, and now every network is doing original content.
Right.
Like CMT just picked up Nashville to do.
Let's talk about that. They should have always had Nashville, right? Why
yes!
on earth
let's
did they
be
not
real.
Have Nashville from the beginning? That was like the fact that they didn't get it from the beginning shows you how behind the times they are, and they will potentially not be around for very long. Because it's like now you're just picking up The Leftovers, also a great show that you did mention, Brandon. I haven't watched it. Now we can just play word salad with great shows. But
like CMT's getting, you had, I mean, I think WGN when they did Manhattan, I don't know if it's still on or not. USA with Mr. Robot, which is like a big show now. And I mean, Fargo, Leftovers, like the list goes on and on. And also too, almost every network has some sort of show that is like their it show, like their banner show.
And see, this is where it was getting me into, because this is what I've found myself doing, is everyone says must-watch TV, and that list is just massive because everybody bandies about the term. But when you really push people on it, like you come up with 5, I have like 3 or 4 shows. And when we're talking about it, we're saying like, okay, well, everyone's going to sign up for Netflix and Hulu and HBO Go and this and this and this, and we're all going to get Stars and Showtime and AMC when it goes over the top. And when you really back up, it's like, no, that's not going to happen. Because for me, like, I only have so much time to watch these things. So what I end up doing is like, okay, so I would like to watch Mr. Robot. Like, I enjoyed watching like the first 6, 7, 8 episodes that I watched. I'd love to pick back up. But like, if I have to get a subscription for it, it ain't gonna happen. You know what I mean? I'm gonna wait. It's not, because I'm gonna watch something else. I'm gonna go watch something else, like a comedy special on Netflix, because I got 30 minutes and I'll pick up the other 30 minutes some other time, right? And it's just like, I'm not gonna open up my like credit card and swipe to get you know, cable just so I can watch this Unreal reality show that we were just talking about. Like, I'd love to watch that. When maybe it hits Netflix or something like that, I'll take a look. But I am not going to get cable for it. You know what I mean? And I think that's where this whole discussion about must-watch TV kind of falls apart when it comes to this unbundling of cable, like the decline. We can include the chart in the show notes, but there's a new chart that we bandied about in the, you know, CineNation chat about the new numbers on the decline in cable subscriptions. And it is a bloodbath. It's accelerating from the year before, mainly among quote unquote millennials. You know, people the only group where it's up is 65 and over. You know, so everybody else is getting rid of these subscriptions, and when they go away, you know, that means the AMCs, the Lifetimes, the USAs, all those channels. Yeah, I mean, sure, they're selling their shows in the like secondary market to other people to carry, but it's just not gonna. I'm not gonna be someone that pays for those shows unless there's just some magical thing. And like Mr. Robot was almost one of those shows for me where I got really hooked on it, and then I just got busy. Like other things happened. 10 other shows came out. You know what I mean? Like if you fall off the wagon, the train keeps moving, and it's just gone. And you know, so it's just like. It's just not going to happen. Well, they're not going to get my money.
I've watched so many shows where I've gotten through like two seasons and I'm like, that was great. And then I got busy and it's a year later. I'm like, well, I'll watch that someday. And it's like the first two seasons, like, and then there's like six seasons or eight seasons or 10 seasons of it. I'm like, well, I don't know if I have the time to catch back up. Because like now it's been a few years. Do I need to rewatch the first two seasons to make sure I know what's going on in season three and all the other ones? So yeah, it's becoming, and granted, I don't think this is a bad thing. I think because we're getting so much great content, it's a double-edged sword in a way. It's like we're getting great stuff, but it's also you become that kid in the wave pool and you're being hit constantly by waves. It's a constant fight, so you have to, because it's like the thing is, because there's so many great things out there, no matter what you're watching, you're gonna miss something.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I wanted to talk with you about it, because I feel like you guys are the most, like, you know, you guys are up on what the kids are watching these days. The kids are watching.
I guess so.
But even then, you're missing so many things, like the jokes that you just potentially said. I think there's two things that take place, like, because I'm interested from like the human, like we as a group all kind of talk to each other about this stuff. Like, I think we're going to hit a point where people like me, and I think there's going to be more of us, where it's finally going to be acceptable to just be like, nah, didn't see it, don't care. You know what I mean? Because it can't go on like this where people are just jerks to each other forever. Like, there's going to be a new acronym or, you know, whatever. People are going to start coming up with an emoji to use. It's just like, leave me alone about this. You know, like, I'm not going to watch Fargo. It's not going to happen. Like, it's just done. Don't talk to me about it.
Are you not?
No, I'm just not. Like, there's so many other shows that I would watch. I'm using a real example. I'm not going to get to that show. Like, maybe someday long ago. But the other part of it is, I think it's coupled together, right? Is as these declines in cable continue, as these cable-specific brands and networks, the middlemen of USA, Lifetime, all these different things, as they start to go away, some of these other shows will probably move on to the Netflix and the Hulus and all these other. There will still be a vibrant thing, but I think we are like golden age of golden age, and I'm not the first one to say it, but this is like peak of the peak. And I think that we're going to still see lots of great content for a long time. But I think this strategy of like having your one great show that saves you, I think it's going to be pretty clear in the next couple of years. It's like, well, if you have a great show that 65-year-olds like, that'll save you, maybe. But if you're trying to do Mr. Robot on USA Network and they're doing all this great promotion, that was the thing, is the promotion campaign was so great. But at the end of the day, they gave away like the first two episodes, I think, online for free. They did all these different things to promote it. They did it on Twitch. Like, they had all this stuff. But I never got a cable subscription. You know what I mean? In the long tail, the long swirl of everything, They didn't get a dollar from me. Now, I mean, I, you know, maybe I watched some ads along the way. I don't remember. But, like, they didn't get anything, right? And it's a very expensive show. They didn't just, you know, give me a free, like, rerun. It was a top-tier show.
Yeah. Well, one interesting, and then I'll say this and then we'll end, but one interesting thing you said was that when these shows end, or when these channels, I guess, and these stations or networks end, these shows end up going to, say, Netflix or Amazon or Hulu, which I find interesting because it's just like movies sometimes, is they now gain a new life, is they have the ability, if they're on Netflix, if they're on that, you can gain a new following. When there are people now who, like, say, watch Parks and Rec, who watch it on Netflix or Amazon, but actually never watched it when it was showing on NBC.
Sure.
It's just you can actually create a following once the show is gone through Netflix and through Amazon, through Hulu, which is interesting. So shows can live on just the way people discover movies. People can discover TV shows now, well, in a better way.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the heart of what, like, you just nailed, I think, what I've been trying to figure out,
yeah.
Which is, I think we're moving more and more to where, like, you don't, like, you've never seen Black Mirror, right?
Yes, correct.
Right, so, like, I think we're getting more and more to where, like, you haven't seen it. I'm not going to shame you about it. It doesn't matter. It didn't have, like, a fixed broadcast date that we, like, debated or, like, stayed up about.
Yeah.
It's that I'm going to talk to it with my, like, with other people who really love the show. And it's more and more just these subcultures and less of these big banner. Like, there'll probably always still be some of these that hold us together as, like, water cooler type conversations. This is why a lot of the cable networks are betting on sports and, you know, these big events that keep everybody, like, sitting around the bar, like, watching the sports ball event, like the NBA Finals or whatever that was, right?
The sports ball.
I genuinely walked into a bar here in Portland, and I was like, why is it so crowded? And they were like, there's a sporting event. I was like, oh, sports ball. Which sports ball is it? And it was like game six of the, you know, thing that was happening, the Cavs and the
NBA Finals.
Yeah, that whole thing. Anyway, I think you nailed it, though, in that some of these shows are going to have second lives, third lives, fourth lives, fifth lives, where no one saw it the first time it ran because it ran on Lifetime or something like that. But everybody can get together and be like, hey, let's all, you know, let's hang out and watch this show that was gone a couple years ago. And then we probably won't be able to talk about it with random people that we meet because there's so many shows, it's so fractured. But I think it'll maybe that will coexist in peace where we don't necessarily just, like, go around bashing each other with, you know, with baseball bats if they haven't seen the most popular show that we deem important. But you should watch Black Mirror, Brandon. It's really good.
So on that note, what, for your recommendations at the end of this thing, what is your must-watch TV show, movie, book, or must-read? What's your recommendation to the listeners?
I think I've already said this before, as far as, like, a must read and all that, but I'm really
The Big Short.
What's that?
No, The Big Short.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I badgered you about that. I'm gonna rewatch The Big Short when it hits Netflix. How crazy is that? That Netflix landed Academy Award winning films, like, so soon. But I'm gonna rewatch it, give it another chance. I loved the book. And found the film just kind of frustrating because I just don't, there's not a, you know, I won't talk forever, but it's basically that sense of, like, justice or some sort of sense of injustice that has time to kind of, like, breathe and let people know, like, this was really, really, really messed up. Like, it was so messed up that people should be working to not just, like, it never happens again and things like that, but to legitimately, like, at basically the book as written, he ends with, like, there's no way that this stuff doesn't get fixed. And then they had to put an appendix at the end of the book that says, oh, wow, this didn't get fixed. Like, this is crazy, you know? And the movie kind of captures that, but I think the book has a spirit to it that I want more of, which is a little bit of rage. Just a little bit of rage.
A little rage?
A little bit.
Okay. So is that your recommendation, is The Big Short?
Yeah, you pushed me to one. I've got many more, but I'll come back on other episodes. I like this show. This is fun.
Okay. We did create it. And then my recommendation, I'll go back to what I said earlier. I'll say join or die. This is a very different recommendation. It's not Game of Thrones. It's not this narrative structured thing. It's just this History Channel show that I really like. And it's just Craig Ferguson. It's like basically Craig Ferguson had his talk show, but he just brought in three more people and they're just going to talk history. That's basically what it is. But I find it really funny. But it's also because it seems very relevant a lot of the times too. And a lot of the times, if it's a very relevant issue, even though it's still like in the past, Craig Ferguson will do this like kind of talk to the camera, to the audience, like where his shirt's unbuttoned, tie's undone, he's drinking like some scotch, and he goes, this thing's still going on today, guys. And he's just like talking about how this topic that took place in the 1940s is still relevant today with things like dictators and government and
financial crisis.
Yeah, it's like that's what it's doing. And so and it does it in a comedic way, but like with comedy, there is truth to it. And so that's why I really like the show. And I like Craig Ferguson. I think he's funny.
Yeah, I saw him promo it on I think Colbert or something, but But yeah, that sounds really good. I mean, it sounds like Drunk History with minus the drinking and a little more accuracy on the history. Like that would be a positive to me.
Yeah. You know,
there's only so much drunkenness that
you can do. So yeah, and then also so that's our recommendations, and then so make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes and write us a review, give us a rating. We want to hear what you guys have to say about the show. We want to make it better. We want to you guys to make sure you enjoy the show and it's not just us rambling. Also to make sure you follow us on Medium. We have a lot of great articles up there. So a lot of good stuff that's about television shows that have recently aired or come out. We have one that Joey Armstrong did about Mr. Robot that's really good and really personal. It's a really good story and article. Subscribe on Medium, and if you want to be a writer for Medium, all you have to do is create a Medium account and send us your stuff about movies, television, entertainment of any kind. And we'll usually publish whatever you send us.
The submission process is really cool. Medium's a great place. It's blogging for the modern age. You know, it's basically what we've always been doing.
Yeah, it's really great. And we have a really good publication. We're really proud of it. And so we'd like to add new voices and new writers to it. Make sure you like us on Facebook. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at CineNationShow. And if you want to follow Ben and hear about his family life, go to @sweet22.
No, I had this long rant today about Apple potentially buying Tidal Music, which I did not talk about in the episode. I am so proud of myself, but I am so frustrated by the potential of this. Follow me on Twitter to learn more @sweet22, SUITE22. It's an old name. I don't know. Brandon, what's yours? BCS kid?
Mine's @BCS_thefilmkid.
Ugh, I failed you. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Ben. I really appreciate it.
No, you're in my autocomplete. It's like speed dial. I don't know your phone number.
That's nice. Anyway, guys, thank you guys for listening. Hope you tune in to more episodes. Ben, thank you for returning, your dramatic return back to the podcast.
Brandon, thanks for not changing the locks that let me back in.
Anytime. Thanks, guys. Bye.